Each person that comes to see love must be established materially in the world, has to figure out how they can do it, be part of the love materialization given their particular circumstances. There is so much sadness to do with this journey for me because of the loss of Prince, which the constant torture and harassment makes difficult to process. But hopefully these circumstances are not yours, and you will find more joy along the way than I have. The joy of seeing love coming to be structurally, spiritually active in the world. A big piece of the sadness for me is the absence of comradeship. This is so important to us as social animals. The use of agents by power to break up such is no small part of their mission. And just because Prince had a lot of people around him doesn't mean that he was spared this consequence of the agent surround and EMF torture, the consequence of isolation and aloneness. I suspect, far from it. Both strategies of which those who want to rule us use to excess when faced with what they perceive as a threat. Hence the quick dismantlement of the Occupy movement, and of course the horror going on in Egypt. So then what does this tell us, what we learned from our Occupy experience? Paul addressed this question too, minus the problem of EMF, which is why the teachings of Paul and Jesus as political guidance for confronting the global state must, from the power guy's perspective, be defeated. And why they strive to undermine our coming together to refresh our minds. Quote from Paul, "Now the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, that ye may abound in hope through the power of the Holy Ghost. And I myself also am persuaded of you, my brethren, that ye also are full of goodness, filled with all knowledge, able also to admonish each other. Nevertheless, brethren, I've written the more boldly unto you in some sort, as putting you in mind, because of the grace that is given to me of God, that I should be the minister of Jesus Christ to the Gentiles, ministering the gospel of God, that the offering up of the Gentiles might be acceptable, being sanctified by the Holy Ghost. I have therefore, whereof I may glory through Jesus Christ in those things which pertain to God. For I will not dare to speak of any of those things which Christ hath not wrought by me to make the Gentiles obedient by word and deed, through mighty signs and wonders, by the power of the Spirit of God, so that from Jerusalem and round about Illyricum I have fully preached the gospel of Christ. Yea, so have I strived to preach the gospel, not where Christ was named, lest I should build upon another man's foundation. But as it is written, to whom he was not spoken of, they shall see, and they that have not heard shall understand. For which cause also I have been much hindered from coming to you. Unquote from Romans 15. We read that last week as well, and I'll be repeating several times some passages because they do rush over us, wave upon wave, the meanings in them. So I want to point out some things in this one. When Paul reminds the people in this group that each one of them is full of goodness, filled with all knowledge, and able to admonish one another, followed up by saying that he would not dare to speak of any of those things which Christ hath not wrought by me. What he's saying to them is, stop it. Cut it out. You have good brains. Admonish each other already. Prince might tell them, half of the staff of your brain's on vacation. Paul is being very polite, very loving. He will grow more strident as he comes to see what he's up against. A group of folks who take being soul dead as a virtue. Shall we quote again Plato's uncle Critias, writing hundreds of years before Paul, discussed in our April 20th, 2014 show. This show was part of our Miklos Neasley's Lessons on Class pages. So if you go to those pages, you will find this and other audio from that period, April, just before and after 2014. I think our Miklos Neasley began several months before that and went on a couple months after. As I said, I've posted this show audio to the Prince Juxtapositions page, quoting Critias. Then came, it seems, that wise and cunning man, the first inventor of the fear of gods. He framed a tale, a most alluring doctrine, concealing truth by veils of lying lore. He told of the abode of awful gods, up in revolving vaults whence thunder roars, and lightning's fearful flashes blind the eye. He thus encircled men by bonds of fear, surrounding them by gods and fair abodes. He charmed them by his spells and daunted them, and lawlessness turned into law and order. We said then we would add some things if we were just focusing on that now, but not to get too distracted. What we said then was, consider this from Plato's beloved Uncle Critias. Consider that poem using this for lens. Consider what it says, that the wise must be devious, and moreover, that duplicity is the mark of the sophisticated culture, i.e. of intelligence, and furthermore, of civilization, the goal being to trick the horde into obedience. And aren't we tired of being manipulated? Aren't we tired of not being self-determined? And do we really think the alternative is so-called chaos? Isn't chaos what they've been doing to us, forcing us to live under conditions of insecurity that have been totally manufactured, herding us into wars, into poisoning the planet, into placidly giving our children up to abandonment, which is also our gifts, relinquishment, in service to we know not what, i.e., all just to stay unconscious, asleep. And this is where the Mr. Smith and the Matrix metaphors exceed in relevance, even the vampire analogy, our longing to be seen and to receive approval, i.e., we're back at the central fact that the core of our distress is coerced child abandonment.